We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Coast to Coast. I'm Calvin Wetzel. Karina Mustafa is not here. She's in the health and safety protocols, but she's going to be all right. I think she'll be back next week. Mm-hmm. But so excited to bring in a special guest who's one of my best friends, favorite people, and an excellent women's basketball analyst, journalist, all of the things, Danny Barlavi. Danny, welcome to the show.
So excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
You're here too.
Yeah. We've been talking so much about the bracket, just like texting, and I feel like that kind of was our prep for this pod. We've already talked it all out. Now we just get to record ourselves doing it. So I'm so excited. It's an amazing time of year, and this bracket is shaping up to be so fun.
Extremely fun bracket. Like, even just in this first weekend, like, there are so many fun close matchups. A lot of matchups that we've been talking about, there's a lot of matchups that are a lot closer than the seeding would suggest. A lot of those, you know, five or so seeds apart, but probably like 2 points apart in reality in a game.
Definitely. There's some teams that you see a 5 or 6 seed playing a double digit seed, and your mind kind of goes to, oh, that they're a lot better, but they're not. Some of these teams are really, really close, and we're going to kind of go through each region one by one and get into some of those matchups. Let's just go in order. We can start with the top left, Albany 1, South Carolina's region. I guess first off, is there anyone, the question that I feel like we have to ask that every talk show is asking, is there anyone who can beat South Carolina? And then also, aside from that, just are there any of these matchups in the first round that you're circling that look really interesting or fun or spicy to you?
I don't think that there's anyone in Albany 1 that's going to really push South Carolina. North Carolina, honestly, might be like a fun matchup in the second round for them. They might, like, you know, we might see one of those classic close first halves in that game if NC makes it past Michigan State. But I think South Carolina turns it on the second half if anything happens and still ends up winning by like 15 plus. Maybe if Notre Dame was fully healthy, they would have a little bit more of a case, but I just don't see anyone in this region really pushing it.
I'm glad you brought up North Carolina though, because they did play earlier this year in November, and that game was at North Carolina. South Carolina won by 7, which is as close as anyone has played them outside of that Tennessee game a couple weeks ago, and then LSU when LSU lost by 6. So North Carolina is one of a few teams to come with
one of just 4.
Just 4. Tennessee, LSU, North Carolina. And do you know the other one off the top of your head? I'm going to put you to the test because I have it here.
I was literally just looking at it.
I'm testing your memory, your women's basketball knowledge.
You know I have a horrible sense of memory. I'm not going to go into why.
That's what I'm doing. It's Utah. Utah lost by 9.
Utah. I remember seeing that just now and being like, wow, Utah is really one of those teams where they're either like really one of the best or really like mid. You know, they're one of those really high variance teams. You don't really know what you're going to get. I think that's always really fun in March, honestly.
Yeah, it just is.
And the way a high ceiling, low floor team.
Exactly. They shoot so many threes that, you know, when they're going in, they can compete with South Carolina. And when they're not going in, they can lose to just about anyone. They can put up.
Yeah, pretty much anyone. Game.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that could go out first round or they could make the Final Four. Who knows? So that's going to be an interesting one. But back to this bracket in the first round matchups. Any of these that you circle that you think maybe there's an upset or maybe it's just going to be like a really interesting game to watch or anything like that?
Just going down it kind of. FGCU, I mean, our friend Owen Pence was saying earlier today, they're the classic hipster upset pick in the women's bracket. I can absolutely see it with Oklahoma, another super high variance team. Finished the season super strong, the Sooners did, but... You know, if we see some regression from them after some time off heading into the tourney, I could easily see FGCU flipping the script on them. I think the Sooners should win that game, but it's definitely within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, those are two teams. That one jumped out to me as soon as they announced it on a selection show because, like you said, with the variance, those are two teams that love to shoot the three as well. And, like, I'm not going to say they're, like... the same team or similar because Oklahoma loves to push the pace and FGCU kind of slows it down. But in terms of they love to get to the rim and shoot threes, that kind of style on offense, we're not going to see very many mid-range jumpers in this game. We're going to see a lot of threes and, like I said, wide range of outcomes. So I had that one circled as well. I am very interested looking forward in this bracket to Notre Dame, Oregon State, if we get that.
Yeah, and I think I think we will. I mean, like, you know, Ole Miss could take out Notre Dame if they beat Marquette. That's definitely within the realm of possibility, as all things are. But yeah, no, if we get that, I think that's really fun. I would take the Beavers in that matchup easily. But I think it would be a really good one.
Yeah, I filled out a bracket. You did finish filling out your bracket, right? I think you.
Yeah,
said
I have finished it. I think I had. I did have that matchup, but I did have Oregon State.
Yeah.
Ultimately losing to South Carolina after beating Notre Dame.
Yeah, I actually have that same thing. I think for Notre Dame, you know, offensively, I think they're going to be fine, but defensively, I think losing Kylie Watson is going to hurt, and especially when you get up against a post like Reagan Beers, if that matchup happens, I think that's going to be tough without the interior defense there. So I agree that I think Oregon State got a real shot to make the Elite Eight out of this one. But like you said, Ole Miss playing their best basketball of the year right now. And
as they always do.
As they always do in March. She's so hard to count out in March. They beat Stanford as they were either an 8 or a 9. And Stanford was a 1. I forget if that was last year or the year before, but they've done
that
it before.
That was last year.
That was last year. Okay, I would not put it past them to do something like that again.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see them upsetting Notre Dame. I can also see them losing to Marquette. I was saying that last night, and it seemed nobody wanted to really engage in it in our group chat, but I can just, you know... Obviously, it's a really fun matchup, that one, because I just don't really think there are two more different teams in this bracket playing each other in the first round. There probably are, but this is up there. You have this, like, you know, one of the top defenses in the bracket in Ole Miss, you know, especially when they're turning it on. They're incredible on that end of the floor, but can really struggle to get anything going offensively sometimes. They're really rough. Basically everywhere on the floor, high turnover team. So if Marquette really can shoot, you know, gets the ball going in the net, like, you know, hits a ton of threes in that game, I could just see them kind of escaping the range that Ole Miss can score within.
Yeah, and Marquette has a lot of shooters, so they're definitely capable of that. I thought it was funny, to your point about Ole Miss offense compared to their defense, when you brought up in the chat what ESPN said, what their I don't know if you have it in front of me. It was really funny. Yeah. I don't even know if like a human wrote this or if this was like AI generated, but ESPN's little matchup previews. Do you have it?
Yeah, it's Ole Miss isn't great at shooting down low and is a bad three-point shooting team, while also struggling mightily at the free throw line. Ole Miss also turns the ball over too much, too. However, this is a lockdown defense and a major reason for the team's success. Yeah, and that's accurate, but like very honestly, really mean.
It is really redundant,
but it's true. They struggle all over the floor. They turn the ball over, but absolute dogs on defense. I mean, and you know, credit to Coach Yo. That's one of the things I feel you really can control as a coach, defensive effort. And they bring it every time. And if they can make Marquette uncomfortable, I mean, it's a matchup I really have going either way.
Yeah, and I think it's a hard team to prepare for when you're out of conference and haven't seen them, especially if they do get to that second, you know, the quick turnaround second day. But I thought it was so funny. Like you said, it was so mean that they could have just said this team struggles to score, but they're lockdown defense. But they had to say, like,
no, they go,
they're bad at this and this and this and this, and list out like every skill that
what you said off. What you said about it being like AI generated is probably true.
Yeah,
I can't see Michael Vopel writing this or anything.
No,
yeah,
that's why I was thinking that, because I don't, like, who would say that? But
yeah, no.
It is true. Very defensive minded team, and that can carry them far. They can win games where they're not scoring. I think that Stanford game was in the 50s, if I remember correctly, and that's
something
the type
like
of game
that. Yeah,
they can win. So.
They have to make they win games by making them for casual viewers unwatchable. And I honestly, like, I feel like we've talked about this a lot. That's the kind of thing that we love, just seeing like a real defensive game, you know, something in the 30s percentage wise in terms of field goal percentage, just a real grinded out kind of game. That's how exactly. Coach Hill plays, and I love it.
Yeah, I do too. And it's one thing in terms of like viewership if you just have two offenses that just like they're not making shots, they're not playing well, they're making lazy passes, etc. But if you have a low scoring game because of good defense and not bad offense, because the defenses are flying around on help because they're getting after locking in, that's fun to watch for me. I know casual viewers want to see 100 to 90, but no, I love that stuff. But speaking of 190 type of games, we move on to the bracket here, to the next region here, Albany 2, Iowa's region. Obviously, lots of scoring in those games. What stands out to you in this region?
Yeah, I've been repeating what our friend Dan Mattia said in, I think, like his Action Network live reaction to this bracket reveal, which is, this is the region of death. This is the region from hell. No one in this region is having a good time. There's no easy path out of this place. I was looking at it before. 9 of the top 26 teams in her hoop stats rating are in Albany 2. That's Iowa, Colorado, Kansas State, Louisville, and Middle Tennessee, LSU, Creighton, and UNLV, and UCLA. So almost every, most of the teams in this region, the majority of them are, per our metrics, a top 25 or 26 team in this country. And that's pretty wild. Obviously, it's kind of hard to say who's going to come out of this one. I'm gravitating towards LSU. I just feel like in such a difficult, absolute gauntlet, having that star power, that high ceiling with that big three, and having, you know, a coach with, say what you will about Kim Mulkey, and I say what I will about her all the time.
I know you do.
She has championship pedigree. She's been here before. She knows how to really get players to tap on something that we haven't seen from them during the season, during the tournament. We saw that last year. no one had LSU winning last year, and you know, she got some of those players that weren't national stories before the finals to really tap in and really play the most outstanding ball of their lives. I just really see them. Obviously Iowa's been playing fantastic ball. I know they're the casual pick to win it all. Even though South Carolina's right there. I just think if it comes down to a rematch, to a championship rematch to get out of this region, LSU takes it. Especially because Iowa just has that target on their back in a way that LSU is somehow shaken after coming into the season with it.
That's a great point. We've already seen that target on social media with Mark Kellogg, head coach West Virginia. Let's send Caitlin Clark packing. I mean, that's how you know there's a target. They got to beat 9-seed Princeton.
They got to beat Princeton first. Yeah, I was tweeting at Princeton and just being like, you see this guy acting like he already beat you? That's what I want to see Princeton send West Virginia packing out. That's disrespectful.
To your point about the target, you don't see coaches say that very often. Usually the coach speak is, we're taking one game at a time. We're not looking ahead, whatever. And when it comes to Caitlin Clark, like, all bets are off. Coach speak is out the window. That's the type of target that she has. But no, your point about LSU too. I mean, you and I sat there in person and watched Jasmine Carson score like 72 points in the first half of that national championship game. And that's a player who I don't know how many people watching that game really knew anything about.
I don't know how many times I've heard her name since,
Yeah, exactly. That's the type of player who can step up. So I think too, I know that when you and I talk about betting and we talk about like live betting in games, you talk about like regression and how like this team is favored by 10 and they're down by 5 at halftime, but they're going to regress to the mean in the second half and they're going to win this game. Sometimes I think that same thing happens on a season-wide level when you have a team who is projected really, really high in the preseason and for whatever reason they don't quite live up to that. LSU hasn't been bad, obviously. They're a 3-seed. They're a top 10, top 15 team. But when you're the preseason number one in the country and you don't get a 1-seed, that's quote-unquote disappointing.
Yeah, that's a letdown.
It's a letdown. But I think that regression to the mean on a season-wide level could be coming for them, and they could, I'm not going to say they are the number one team, that's South Carolina, but I do think they could sort of regress towards that top four, top five type of level in the country and come out of this region. But region of death, it's crazy. That stat
it's crazy.
You mentioned over half of the teams in this region in the top 26. And I was looking too, you were asking me about Kansas State earlier when we were texting.
Yeah.
It got me thinking, I was looking at this region. Another way to put this in perspective, I believe off the top of my head, and I haven't even looked this up, at least five of these teams have been ranked in the top three in the country this year, maybe even top two, because obviously LSU was preseason number one. Iowa was number two at one point. Colorado was at least number three. I think they might have been number two at one point. Kansas State was number two at one point. And UCLA. And I think a week or two after Aoka Lee got hurt, still number two. And then UCLA was number two at one point, too. That's at least the top five seeds who were top two or three in the country at a certain point.
You kind of love to see it as a fan. Because obviously, like, these matchups are going to be incredible no matter how this shakes out. Like, every round, almost every game is going to be absolute dynamite. But in terms of like fairness, in terms of like an equal distribution of talent across the bracket, you have to kind of squint at that for me. I kind of like do wonder how much the committee thought through how much they were packing this region. But, it's going to be really fun, so who cares?
Yeah, it's to me, like, when you talk about the committee, I feel like most of the time when we see the committee make mistakes on the men's or women's side, it's or even just things that we sort of can question, it's like it almost looks like, oh, they're setting this up for a certain type of thing. But I would have thought coming in, if you would have told me the committee's going to try to rig it or set it up for a certain thing, I would have thought they would try to set it up for Iowa to go as far as possible, because Iowa is the team that the media loves or the team that get the ratings, but they really didn't set it up for Iowa to have a cupcake path at all.
Not
so
at all.
If they're gonna rig it one way, they sort of rigged it the other way. But
you're absolutely right with that. Yeah,
I don't feel sorry for Iowa at all, but I do think that they have a really tough region here. Are there any first round? Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say I'm excited to see Caitlin Clark put through the absolute ringer here. You know, I'm obviously a huge fan of her game. I love Caitlin, but like I understand that she is for most players in this country, I think, the bad guy in a way. Not that there's anything wrong with her as a person, but you know, when one person is getting all of this attention, all you want to do is shut them down. And I'm excited to see the way that all of these teams go for that. I'm excited to see the way that she overcomes that. And I think she'll play some of the most impressive basketball of her career in response to that pressure.
Yeah, and it's the last chance we're going to get to see her in a college uniform for the next couple weeks. So I do think she's going to turn it on. But in terms of teams kind of going at her, there's a lot of teams capable of it. Kansas State already beat them. Beat Iowa once, like you said, this year and last year.
I think
year.
That could happen again. Yeah.
I do as well.
I mean, I think
the real shot.
I think Kansas State is better than they were then. Iowa is also better than they were then. But, you know, as we were kind of alluding to before, Kansas State learned how to be one of the best teams in the country without their star, which is, you know, in terms of just like surviving a high octane tournament game, doesn't get much better than that. You know, even if Iowa finds a way to completely neutralize Yoki, there's a path for them to still create offense.
Yeah, and they did have Aoka Lee in the win when they beat Iowa this year and when they played them close in the other game. But last year, Kansas State didn't have Aoka Lee for the whole year, still beat Iowa. So you're right. That path is there. I'm also really, really looking forward to if West Virginia does get their shot to, as Mark Kellogg said, send Caitlin packing, if they beat Princeton, which is a big if. Princeton's a great team.
Great team.
I am so excited, and I'm not saying that West Virginia is going to do it, but I'm so excited to see JJ Quinterly of West Virginia get her shot at Iowa because she is one of the best guards in the country. Really both sides, but in particular defensively on top of West Virginia's press. And she's been on lots of defensive player of the year type of watch list. She's on the top five shooting guard watch list. And she's someone who absolutely is not going to be afraid of Caitlin, not going to back down. I think that matchup will be incredible. Jordan Harrison, their backcourt partner, very good guard as well. But Caitlin going against that press will be fun. I think Iowa would come out of it, but it would be an entertaining watch, no question. Yeah. Are there any other matchups in this one that you're looking at, either potential or in the first round?
Yeah, I feel like we haven't talked about any first round ones. I mean, we've talked around West Virginia, Princeton. That's going to be a great game, especially now. I really do think, or I should say, I really hope that the Princeton Tigers like really take this on their. What is it called? Their bulletin board
board.
Yeah, this is major bulletin board material. They're not even being discussed. They're being overlooked. I wouldn't stand for that if I were them. I think Colorado Drake is going to be really great. You more than anyone know that Drake is a team that can just absolutely create offense like no one's business. If they get their offense going, if they're hitting their threes, I mean, it's hard to keep up with them. I could see that being a potential upset. I could also see it being like a 20-point win for Colorado. I'm hoping it's going to be closer than that. But yeah, I got that on upset watch. Drake's awesome. And then, yeah, I mean, that second round potential matchup between Kansas State and Colorado, I think Kansas State comes out of it, but that should be pretty lit.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to those ones as well. And like you said, I've seen Drake in person a couple times, and it's not a fun offense to try to guard. It's really like it's a nightmare if you're on defense trying to stop all their different actions and in motion. But Louisville, Middle Tennessee, another one that I know you and I both have circled it on upset watch as well. I think we saw Middle Tennessee win this game pretty easily when they played in the regular season last year. Really, Louisville wasn't particularly in the game at all. And that was when they had Haley Van Lith. Now they don't. Middle Tennessee returns most of
the time. They also don't have Haley. They don't have Haley Van Lith's faith in them to win this game, apparently.
They don't. They don't.
No.
She that her very first reaction was not high on Louisville winning this game.
I'm glad we got that.
I am too. I'm too. What a great moment. Go look it up on Twitter. Just type in Haley Van Lith. You got to see the video. Haley Van Lith, Middle Tennessee or something. It's so funny.
Yeah.
I do think
Louisville their defense isn't what it's been in past years consistently. They're one of those. This is one of those 6-11 matchups that's so much closer than 6-11 would suggest. Especially if we see Louisville on one of their really bad days. I think it could be similar to that regular season matchup where Middle Tennessee just absolutely humiliates them. To put it as unkindly as I can. but yeah, no, I definitely have that circled. I think they come out.
Yeah, no, I do too. I think Louisville, I've said this a million times and I keep bringing it up in articles and in texts and on pods and whatever, because it still blows my mind in 2024 for a team that's a top 25 basketball team at any level to have three starters, over half their starting lineup has not hit a three the entire season. I don't know how you get away with that.
No.
I don't know how, I don't know how they score more than 7 points a game doing that. It doesn't make sense. Tennessee has an elite 6'6" shot blocker. For people who haven't watched them, one of the top shot blockers in the country. So you're not scoring on them inside. You score on Middle Tennessee, you got to hit threes. And Louisville's not doing that. So I agree. I think Middle Tennessee's coming out of this one. Are there anything else you're looking at in this bracket, or should we move on to the
Creighton, UNLV, another one of those matchups, 7-10. Sounds close-ish, but it's you know... I would have this 7-10 the other way personally if I was seeding these teams. UNLV has been absolutely dominating the Mountain West this year. Their net margin is 20 points or so. And like, you could talk about strength of schedule, but we looked it up before. Mountain West is like the ninth team in the ninth conference in the country for average net rating of the teams in that conference. So they're not, you know, it's not unimpressive competition that UNLV has been playing against. I would kind of say that Mountain West and Big East are kind of like in the same general neighborhood of conferences, even though one is traditionally in women's basketball a power conference and one isn't. I think UNLV takes this kind of easily. I think they have the best player on the floor. I'm more impressed by their resume.
Desiree Young, I'm sure you're talking about the Mountain West Player of the Year. And to your point about schedule, like, obviously the Mountain West isn't always going to test you to the extreme. Maybe like playing UConn, of course there's some easy wins in the Big East too, but then you have a couple at the top that are tough. But UNLV did test themselves in the non-conference a few times. They also played a few gimmies, but they played Arizona, won by 19. Arizona is in this field. They went on the road to Oklahoma. Obviously, Oklahoma wasn't playing the same in November and December that they did in the Big 12, but that's the Big 12 champion. UNLV went into their building and won by 16. So UNLV has got, you know, demonstrated it against some of the higher level competition. And you're right. I think they got a real shot. All right. Yeah, let's look at
Sorry, Portland. Before we get off UNLV, I got to say, if they beat Creighton and if they catch UCLA on a bad day in the second round, it can happen. It can absolutely happen. Yeah. They match up well. UCLA has also, like, you know, they've had a really great season, but they've put up some real stinkers also. Yeah, I keep using this term, but it's just not outside the realm of possibility for me that UNLV ends up upsetting UCLA in that second round.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I'm glad you fit that in there.
If it happens, I want the receipt. I want a video.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm glad you fit it in so we have something to clip on social media if you're right. And you know, if UCLA wins by 50, we can clip it and everyone can tell you how you were wrong.
Don't call me. Yeah.
But we should look at the Portland regionals. So going to the bottom left, I guess we can start with Texas's region. I think this is another pretty tough one. It's not quite the region of death, but
I think for Texas in particular, like, there are some really solid teams in here. Don't get me wrong. Gonzaga is great and, you know, such a great story, and they can absolutely come out. I do think in terms of the one seeds, Texas has the easy, has the easiest path outside of South Carolina. And that's, you know, South Carolina just has the easiest path by virtue of being South Carolina. It's not even about their opponents. I just, you know, real credit for Texas, like, doing all of this without Rory Harmon is amazing. But yeah, I think they have kind of a cupcake path out. I want to see it. I want to see them in Cleveland. I think they've earned a trip to the Final Four as much as anyone has overcoming the adversity that they've overcome. It doesn't really bother me that they have an easy way out, but I think they do.
Yeah, you know, what they've been able to do without Rory Harmon and Madison Booker stepping up as a freshman for them is incredible.
So, like,
I think a lot of people,
so
including me, thought, yes, I didn't, I'm not going to say like thought their season was done type of thing when Rory was out. You know, I thought they were still obviously going to be like a top 15, 20 team, but did not see them as a one seed contending for a Final Four at that point. Absolutely not.
No.
So credit to them.
No.
I do think this region is very, very tough to predict. I think there's a lot of, I mean, it's March. Everything's tough to predict. South Carolina is the one that's not, because it's South Carolina. But when I look at Gonzaga, like, Texas is going to be favored, no question. But Gonzaga, I love that they get to stay home. They lost to Portland in the conference championship, and we weren't sure if the committee was going to still let them get a top four seed and host the first two rounds. They did. And then when you get to the regional in Portland, that's a lot closer to Gonzaga than it is to Texas, than it is to most of these other teams. Stanford is probably the next closest, but I think Gonzaga's got a nice little path here if they can upset Texas.
Gutted for the Beavers that they're not in this region. just gutted.
Yes, Talia von Ohlhofen wanted it so bad, as we saw on Twitter. Yeah. That would have been amazing for them. It probably would have been unfair for whoever the 1 and 2.
Yeah, no, were, completely unfair. But yeah, no, the Gonzaga having like a soft travel advantage, home-ish court region court advantage, absolutely something that factors in if it does come to Texas playing Gonzaga. They are realistically, for me, I think the biggest threat. I mean, Utah's in there. They're really, we talked about it before. They're really good when they're really good. They're really bad when they're really bad. I think that there are too many, you know, I think that I could see Utah beating Gonzaga and I could see Utah beating Texas. I just don't see them both happening one after the other. That seems like a fringe scenario to me. Them being good two games in a row, I don't know if I've seen it this season. No lost love. I do love the Utes.
I know you love Alyssa. But
yeah, I love Alyssa. Other than that, looking at this first round, I think Tennessee Green Bay is going to be a fun matchup. You know, I'm irrationally high on Tennessee. I am, but you know, if I step back from that, and really look at what these two teams have done, I think Green Bay has the potential to play them pretty close. You know, we can get back into the mid-major strength of schedule conversation, but what they've done in the Horizon League is still just an obscene level of dominance. You know, they're just so much better than even like the second best team in that conference. So you know, it's funny. I could see Tennessee making the Elite Eight, and I could see them getting upset by Green Bay in the first round. Those both seem possible.
Yeah, that's why I love March. There's so many teams that you feel like they might be going home on day one, or they might make a really incredible run, and we might be seeing them for a few weeks sticking around. Tennessee, definitely one of those. The way they played South Carolina all year, obviously the big year. One is the one a couple weeks ago, but all year, three times. They haven't gotten blown out yet in any of those three matchups.
No, they haven't lost by more than 11. Other than LSU, they're the only team that has played them within single digits twice this year. And that's the golden standard for women's college basketball, you know? Like, South Carolina is, in 2024, the best possible women's college basketball team statistically. And, you know, it just for me, it's very basic, simpleton logic. But I'm just like, if Tennessee can they practically beat South Carolina? If not for that one in a million shot, and obviously you can get into they should have been guarding Camilla Cardoso, they should have picked her up if you think that, whatever. But, you know, other than that, outside of that one play, they beat South Carolina. So it's hard for me to not accept that they couldn't beat NC State and they couldn't beat Stanford. Stanford is especially a team that I'm kind of low on. I feel like they're another team that just, like, when they struggle hard. Also, just shout out Rekaya Jackson. She's one of the best players in this tournament. Deserves more respect.
She is, and having her and Cameron Brink in the same region, that would be really fun if we did get that matchup.
Yeah, I want that matchup.
Of the four lottery picks, I think, right there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
As a WNBA first person. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, if you're a WNBA person and you're watching, I mean, those are ones to circle right there. But going back to Utah, one thing that I'm looking forward to, and we talked about Gonzaga, Brennan Maxwell for Gonzaga, elite shooter who's been with them for a couple of years, transferred from Utah. And I always love when we get these. I feel, you know, we've been getting them in the pros, I think, for a long time, revenge games, because players move around and there's always going to be someone playing their former team. In college, it doesn't happen nearly as often, but now that the transfer portal, where there's more movement, we're starting to get it more. And this is one that I looked at. I'm sure when Brenna Maxwell, who by the way has been on this pod before, when Brenna saw that match,
friend of the pod,
yeah, exactly. I hope Brenna gets to have that matchup against her former team. I think it'd be really fun. Haley Van Lith, by the way, is another one I forgot to mention. We talked about her with the LSU and the Middle Tennessee reaction, but LSU is actually in that pod with Louisville and Middle Tennessee.
No, LSU Louisville is a likely outcome. Yeah.
Yeah. If she's wrong and Louisville does beat Middle Tennessee, she might be playing them next. So another revenge game possibility.
Lots of fun storylines across the bracket.
But going back to the Portland.
Who do you have coming out of the region of death, by the way? I don't think you ever said.
Oh, you're right. So I had South Carolina in the first one, and then I have, who do I have? Which one is that? Oh, yeah, I have LSU. I'm the same as you on that one.
Got it.
South Carolina, LSU. We'll see. I don't remember who you have in the other two, so we'll see if we line up. Actually, yeah, let's get to that. In Portland, the one we were just in, Portland 4, the Texas region, who do you have coming out of that?
I have Texas. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I have Texas. I have Texas beating Tennessee after Tennessee beats NC State of Stanford in the bracket that I've kind of just riffed off. More likely, I feel like we see Texas Stanford in that final game. And I do think. I mean, it could be Stanford, but. I'm riding with Texas. I'm riding with the Longhorns.
Yeah. Number one seed for a reason. This is a matchup that we've seen before. Texas Stanford. I'm trying to look up when it was, and because I don't remember exactly. I think it was 2 years ago.
I don't remember it at all.
It was it was 2 years ago. It was in, it looks like, the Elite Eight. Yep. And Stanford beat them 59-50. So we could see the rematch of that same thing, another Elite Eight matchup. Stanford versus Texas, and Texas, anyone who's still on the team, I'm sure would remember that. But I do have Stanford actually coming out of this region. Although, like I said, this one is so tough to predict that I think, like, if you ask me the one I feel most likely to be wrong about, I think it's this one. I think I could see Texas, obviously. I could see Gonzaga, and you and I have an article coming out. By the time people are listening to this, it might already be out. Where we have some hot takes, and like, just so people know, like, the some of the hot takes, like, I'm not necessarily like picking them in quotes in my like official bracket because they're like too hot, but like, I think they're close enough to having a chance that, like, if I'm having fun with it and making a hot take, I'll put it in there. So I'm not picking Gonzaga to come out of this region, but I do think Gonzaga has a better chance than maybe what a lot of people would be giving them, given how close they get to stay to home. And by the way, we've seen Gonzaga blow out Stanford this year. So if Gonzaga and Stanford meet in the Elite Eight, they've done it already, back in November, December. So I'm not picking Gonzaga, but I do have them in the article as a hot take. And I do think they could get it done. I'm picking Stanford.
There's a path.
I think any one of the top six seeds in this region has a very legitimate path.
I like that you're including Tennessee for me in that.
They do. Beat South Carolina for 39 minutes and 59 and a half seconds. I think you can come out of your region. We have one more region to get to. Portland 3. I guess I didn't go in order because I did 4 before 3. But this is the bottom right USC's region. Yeah, it's like a circle.
It goes around. Yeah, 1, 2, 4, 3.
Clockwise. Whatever. Or, I don't know. Well, anyway. USC, bottom right. Yeah, what stands out to you about this one?
I'm looking at the. I'm trying to start with.
Danny said with nothing. This region is so boring. Nothing
this is boring.
No good basketball played in this region.
No. I'm looking at it. I think that Kansas State and Michigan should be a good game. I just don't have much to say about it. I don't know who's going to win. I don't have a strong lean there. But yeah, I think it'll be played close and well. One first round matchup that I have circled as a potential upset is Syracuse versus either Arizona or Auburn. I think either Arizona or Auburn have a really good shot to upset Hughes. Auburn has a really amazing defense. We've seen what they've done to LSU this year. We've seen what they've done to South Carolina this year. And I really think that they could just make Syracuse's life really difficult. I could definitely see a play-in making it out of the first round, out of that play-in. It's a shame that there's not room for Auburn and Arizona in the actual tournament.
Yeah, we do see play-ins have success in the next round sometimes. So that's one I could see as well. I think that'll be a really fun matchup, regardless of who comes out of that one. You and I have talked about Virginia Tech Marshall as another one. I don't think we have any official word on Elizabeth Kittley, but I don't think she's going to play. I think it didn't look good, and if I had to guess, I would probably say she's not going to play in this one. I would guess that they're just kind of holding their cards close and not saying it officially. So that's going to be tough for them. We saw how they looked against, I think it was Notre Dame in the ACC tournament. It was all over and without Elizabeth Kittley. Marshall is a team that if you haven't seen them this year, if you haven't played them, if you're not in their league, it's weird. It's a crazy team. Fastest pace in the country. They press the most of anyone in the country. They create havoc. They launch threes. They go up and down. And
they're absolute honey badgers. Like their pace and their aggression is terrifying. It honestly is. They are really the thundering herd. It's not just a nickname anymore.
They are. I love what you said, honey badgers. Great descriptor. First year head coach Kim Stevens, by the way, so shout out to her, because this team used to be a very slow team for the last several years, and she just came in, revamped everything, said we're gonna play this crazy style and it's gonna work, and it did. They won the league regular season, they won the Fun Belt, they won the conference championship in a absolutely ridiculous game that went to overtime against James Madison. Just exemplifies everything about how wild this team is. Some of the stats, do you remember, like, the disparity in rebounds one way and turnovers the other way, and shot attempts.
Yeah, no, it was a truly the team stats page on ESPN, like, escaped women's basketball Twitter, and like people on general basketball Twitter were talking about it because it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was one of those. Like, the game went to overtime. So in theory, you think, like, overtime game, like, I think Marshall won by three. It should be, like, a lot of the stats should be pretty close. But, like, none of the individual stats were remotely close. Like, one team won by a million in this category. One team won by a million in this other category. It was absolutely wild. So buckle up. Buckle up anytime Marshall plays. Yeah, no.
They're chaos.
Georgia Amor, get ready to break that press. That's going to be a fun first-round matchup, I think. Are there any go ahead.
I was just going to say, if Virginia Tech without Kittley does still beat Marshall, and they still should be, like, favored without Kittley.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't see Kittley less Virginia Tech, or, you know, like, even with her, Baylor stands a pretty significant challenge in that second round for them. I really like Baylor to come out of that pod, regardless of if Kittley plays, but especially if she doesn't. I know you share that feeling.
I do. I have Baylor coming out of that pod. And honestly, like you said, even if Kittley plays, I think that's going to be a tough one. It does. Virginia Tech, obviously.
There's no way she's 100. There's no way that Kittley's 100% is another thing. Definitely. Even if she does play, yeah.
Definitely. So it's going to be tough. You know, playing at home is going to help, and that might be the edge that they need to get past the thundering herd, honey badgers, but Baylor's going to be tough. If Baylor, of course, can get out of first round, because 5-12 ups, those happen. Are there any other matchups?
That's true. Van Columbia are very good teams. Very, very good teams.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm looking. Vandy Columbia, by the way, in terms of playing games,
that's going to be probably the game of the play-in. I mean, you obviously, like, I was just talking about Auburn, Arizona. I think that'll be fun too. But I think Vanderbilt Columbia should be a lot more exciting. That's definitely going to be the one to watch of those playing games.
Yeah, it's basically a pick 'em, as it should be, and you know, it's going to be. It's going to get this tournament started off with all sorts of excitement before we even get to the first round. I think are there any, when you look deeper in this bracket, I mean, we kind of talked about some of the first round matchups, any potential ones in the second round, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, maybe, that you hope we see or think would be intriguing?
So we talked about revenge games. I like Duke, Ohio State in the second round for Celeste Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I also just think that's a really fun game. We've seen the Ohio State offense really get stalled by some teams this season. Another team that looks great when they look great looks really bad when they look really bad. I think that Kara Lawson has the tools and the know-how to mess with them a bit. I don't know if it'll be enough for Duke to pull off the upset there if we get that matchup, but I think they'll make life difficult. I think Celeste Taylor is going to miss being on the other side of that defense. But yeah, that should be a fun one. USC Baylor, if Baylor comes out of that pod, that should be another one that's really fun. I actually can totally see Baylor pulling that off also. I think that the coaching becomes really important deeper in the tournament. And I, you know, have amazing things to say about the coaching at Baylor. If they can shut down Juju Watkins, although obviously we've seen, recently that, USC can be pretty good even when Juju isn't going. That should be a matchup that is closer than 1-5 would suggest, I would say.
Nikki Collin has done an excellent job with Baylor. And like you said, Juju Watkins, I mean, Juju didn't even win the MVP of the Pac-12 tournament when they won the whole thing because she didn't have her best game in the championship game in Mackenzie Forbes. They got other players who can step up. But USC versus really anyone is fun just in terms of entertaining basketball because Juju Watkins plays for USC. You get to watch Juju Watkins. I mean, USC versus Texas A&M Corpus Christi. It's going to be fun in that game. I'm not saying it's going to be an entertaining last minute finish, but it's going to be fun to watch. Another one that I have circled later in this bracket, I think if it happens in the Sweet 16, if chalk holds, Ohio State versus UConn, because Ohio State ended UConn's streak of, I want to say it was 15 or so straight Final Fours going into last year, or 14 or 16, whatever the number was, and Ohio State ended it. Ohio State knocked UConn out in the Sweet 16, and now we're set up to potentially see that again. I think that's always adds a level of intrigue to games like that.
It's going to be a spicy game.
It is.
It's going to be a game that both of those teams really, really, really want.
So bad.
Obviously, any game in the tournament is a game that you really, really, really want. But this is going to be personal. Yeah.
Well, anytime you play UConn, that's a team that, has had so much success that they have a target on their back like Caitlin does. But anytime you get knocked out the year before by a team, if UConn's playing Ohio State, now you're putting a target on them too because you want to get your revenge. I think Ohio State kind of goes as Cody McMahon goes sometimes. Yeah. I think, J.C. Sheldon is J.C. Sheldon. And when you see Cody McMahon sort of settle for jumper sometimes, and to your point about the Duke game, I think Kara Lawson and her Duke defense are going to try to make that happen. Then sometimes that offense can stall. When Cody McMahon is in full go mode, like we saw at home against Iowa earlier this year, I forget about it. Like, Ohio State could win a national championship if they get that version of Cody McMahon for six games.
Yeah. In Cleveland?
In Cleveland, yeah, that's in another motivating factor. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah. Ohio State is able to make it out of this region. They get to play probably closer than anyone else would be playing for in the
massive,
Final Four.
Massive alumni contingent in Cleveland, obviously, and I love that for them. I love that for them so much. I think they'll be extremely motivated to get there as well. I have them coming out of this region. I have them actually in this bracket I'm looking at. I have them beating Baylor because Baylor beat USC. More realistically, it will be USC Ohio State. Extremely, extremely, extremely fun matchup. And I think Ohio State just, we talk also. You were talking before about season long regression. I think Ohio State has been showing that they started really not great after, you and I at least were extremely high on them going into the year.
Yeah, and
they've
part of their not great start was losing to this USC team at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, it's kind of, that's so fun. I really hope we get that. That's so star-crossed, you know, such a destiny moment. If we get that rematch, to enter the Final Four, but yeah, I think OSU comes out of this region. I just feel really good about it. They have a really tough path out. You know, I'm by no means certain of that. You know, they have to beat Duke first. They have to beat UConn first. They probably have to beat USC. That's hard. I think they're up for it. I think they're hitting their stride. I think they've hit their stride at the right moment. Obviously, it will go as Cody goes. I believe in her.
I think they have a real shot. I am picking UConn out of this region. And again, like you said, I think this is another one. Who knows what happens? Anything could happen. USC, Ohio State, there's a lot could happen. But I am taking UConn. I think even though it's in Portland, they got to go cross country. But, you know, UConn fans travel.
Yeah.
And that gets us to the Final Four. Before we wrap up, we should probably make our Final Four picks. So I have South Carolina versus Stanford, which would be another rematch that we saw a couple years ago.
Yeah.
In the Final Four, and LSU versus UConn. You have South Carolina versus Texas.
Yeah.
And LSU versus Ohio State. So, all right, South Carolina versus Texas. Who you got?
I got South Carolina in that game pretty easily. I think they're going to miss Rory a lot in that game, more than they maybe have all year. But yeah, I mean, it's so funny because, you know, we're looking at this matchup of 2-1 seeds and I'm just like, that's a blowout. That's a blowout to me. South Carolina is just so far above the other 1 seeds in this tournament. It's insane.
Yeah. You know how far ahead South Carolina is of everyone when I feel like a handful of teams that we've talked about in this pod, we like our best thing we can say about them is that they lost by not 20 to South Carolina. Like, oh, they only lost by like 8. Like
Tennessee lost by 11 to South Carolina. Yeah, they're like, wow, really good. That's an insane thing to say. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's just says more about South Carolina than it does about anyone else. So I am with you. I have Stanford, but I have South Carolina beating Stanford in this one.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, I have LSU versus UConn. So 2-3 seeds. That's not something we've seen in quite a while. But these are also 2-3 seeds that were literally number one and number two in the AP poll preseason. So when you talk about the season long regression, like this is the two teams that were supposed to be in the national championship. And I have them meeting up in the Final Four. I do have UConn coming out of that matchup, and then getting a South Carolina UConn national championship rematch. Wow. Which I think is going to go the same way the last one did. I have South Carolina winning that one. I think Paige Beckers is going to take UConn really far this year, but I don't think she's going to get the ring. I think South Carolina is grabbing another one. Who do you have coming out of LSU versus Ohio State? And then who do you have winning the championship?
I think this is a really hard one. And I think that if it was a neutral court situation, I'd have LSU. You know, just going back to what I was saying about, you know, the championship pedigree of this program, of Kim Mulkey, of Angel Reese, and then what they've added on top of that in Haley and in, Anissa Morrow. It's 11:06 p.m. Anissa Morrow played in Chicago and I live in Chicago. Let's take that whole thing again. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, I think that with the additions and with the championship pedigree that LSU has on a neutral court, I would have them winning. But this is not a neutral court. I really think playing in Cleveland is basically a home game for Ohio State. I don't think it's like home-ish. I don't think that it's like, you know, I think it is a full-on home court advantage. I don't I think we'll have LSU fans in the building for sure. They travel. They're extremely spiteful and loud people. But I think that the Buckeyes fans will drown out that noise. And I do think we see OSU get to the championship game in their home state.
Okay. And then South Carolina. And then,
I have South Carolina. Yeah, South Carolina still winning that game. I think OSU plays them closer. I think they can become the fifth team that has played them to single digits all year. I think they can lose by like 7 or 8 with the energy of the crowd behind them. But yeah, I there's no team in the field that I realistically can be like they are beating South Carolina outside of a fringe scenario. You know,
I agree.
Outside of like a less than 1% chance scenario.
Yeah.
And we already saw that less than 1% chance scenario play out and they didn't lose.
That's the thing to me is that South Carolina is not going to beat everyone by 20 every game. Obviously, no. They do that a lot, but we see some teams hang around for a while. What sets South Carolina apart to me is that they are so honestly tested that when they get into those late close game situations and well coached with Dawn Staley, that they have an advantage and they know how to win. Like sometimes it sounds like a cliche, but I think knowing how to win is a real thing, and South Carolina knows how to win. And so when they get into a last minute tie game scenario, they know what they have to do and they know what it takes. And if you want to beat South Carolina,
the craziest thing ever.
I mean,
even if it's the funniest possible play call, your
senior center who has never hit a three in her entire career, hitting a three, whatever it takes, South Carolina is going to get you. And last year they didn't have the shooting. This year they do. You can't even guard them the way I would did. So
no, I was going to say it's a lot of people talk about how they lost their entire starting five, but like. They returned a lot of their key bench pieces who are now starters, obviously Cardoso chief among them. But they also, you know, their main weakness was they didn't have a shot creating guard, and now they have Tahina Paopao, and she's amazing in that role for them. Much better than she ever has been in the past. Dawn has really unlocked something in her. I tweeted it a couple months ago. She looks so amazing as a Gamecock. So, so amazing.
Without questions, and she's one of the best shooters in the country. It's been huge for them. Mm-hmm. They also have some other players shooting the ball well this year. Bree Hall, Raven Johnson, who I think is one of the coolest stories in the country, that she got waved off at the three-point line last year, and she decided to go do something about it, and now she can shoot. I think that's so cool. That's the exact correct response.
That.
When someone disrespects you, go get better, and she did.
Especially as a college student, you know, it's all about improving your game. It's all about learning. You're a student. She meaningfully addressed a deficit in her game. And, you know, now she's an amazing three-point shooter.
And now no one's going to be waving her off in this tournament without question. I think that could be what carries South Carolina all the way.
And that speaks to Dawn again, that development to me. You know, that she inspires that self-confidence. She inspires that work on it attitude, that grit. And I think that same grit will carry them, you know, if someone does play them super closely like Tennessee did, which I don't think anyone will.
in the fact that Dawn is such a relationship builder and keeps players for 3-4 years, I think really helps her with that player development that you talked about, because she gets to have these players around and kind of see them through their whole college career. And she gets to turn them from freshmen who maybe have a hole in her game to seniors who apparently have no holes. Cause even Camilla Cardoso can shoot.
Yeah,
threes.
Camilla can shoot.
I think me and she has no holes in her game if she can hit threes. But that's just Dawn Staley. So we both have South Carolina winning it all. To come full circle after all these upsets and madness and crazy unpredictability that we talk about, we all come back to the team that hasn't lost is going to continue to not lose and win all 6 of these games. Well, Danny, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really fun, and I can't wait to watch all these games with you. If you're listening, you want to go follow Danny, DBL Fluidity.
Yeah.
I think there's no, oh yeah, you have it on the screen. That's right. I was trying to remember if there's an underscore or something. No, just DBL Fluidity.
No. So
go follow Danny. They're going to have some good work coming out this week. And enjoy the games. Thanks for hanging out.
Yeah.